welcome to episode 3 of the Cycling Europe podcast. And with an introduction like that, it can mean only one thing. The November 2017 podcast is dedicated to cycling and film. We'll be speaking to two acclaimed filmmakers, travelling across the plains of Mongolia, and catching up with the British Film Institute. But before any of that, we're off on our own travels. With that sound, you might think I've come to Edinburgh or Glasgow, but I haven't. I've just come across to Leeds, which is not too far away from where I live, for the monthly Leeds Bicycle Film Club. I've been coming here for the last few years. It's run by a chap called Ian Street, and where better a place to explore bicycles and film than the Leeds Bicycle Film Club? Deception, please. Thank you. Do you listen to many cycling podcasts?
None. Oh, no, the only one I listen to is the Speed Metal Cycling Podcast.
Right, OK.
Which is great. Okay. But obviously, I'm going to have to dig yours out, aren't I? What's it called?
The Cycling Europe Podcast.
Obviously. Hello, my name is Ian Street, and I run the Leeds... I run the Leeds Bicycle Film Club.
Okay.
That's not what it's called, is it? What's my thing called?
Start again.
What am I called? The Leeds Cycle. What am I called?
The Leeds Bicycle Film Club.
That's what I'm called, yeah. Hi, my name's Ian Street and I run the Leeds Bicycle Film Club.
With that sorted, we could get started. We were standing in the small cinema room at the rear of the Reliance pub in Leeds, and I asked Ian how he'd come up with the idea of running a bicycle film club in the first place.
I think that I tend to have lots of crazy ideas, usually sat in pubs when I'm drinking beer. This is a very good place to sit and drink beer. I knew that they had this little cinema, and for a while I'd been thinking of an idea of trying to maybe combine a few things I love, which is film and cycling and beer. Could I combine those into an evening? And I thought, well, I didn't want to hire lots of equipment. They've got it all here. And I thought, I had a chat with them. I know they're cycle friendly. So I thought, well, I'll have a chat. See if we could put it on. They said, yeah, give it a try. And we've been going for 2 years and putting on a film or a documentary every month.
Yeah, cycling, beer and film, that sounds good to me. Now, I think I've been to probably most of the films that you've shown over the last 2 years. I should get some kind of award for turning up, I think. But what makes a good cycling film?
Well, that's a good question. I think from my point of view, what I didn't want this to be was a cinema just for people who like cycling, so which I know a lot of people do come who do like cycling, but for me it was also about people who like films and filmmaking and different types of films. So I was really keen that whatever I showed, it would show A, the whole breadth of cycling, so it doesn't matter whether you like touring or cyclocross or road riding or you just poodle to the shops. I wanted to capture the whole gamut of cycling, but I also wanted to try and combine that with capturing the whole gamut of film. So I try and show feature films, documentaries, shorts, animation, you know, different types of filmmaking, and combine that with different types of cycling. So for me, I'm not sure there is one thing that makes a good cycling film. I think that if the people who are producing the art form, if they're producing a 5 minute short, that can be as valid as a feature film, as valid as a documentary. It's the people who are making that product, that bit of art, for me, that's the key. And if they weave a bicycle in there somewhere, then I'll try and show it.
So thinking about all the 20 odd films that you've shown over the course of the last couple of years, can you pick out some of your favourite films that people might be able to go off and watch and enjoy?
Yeah, sure. I mean, for me, when I started it, I didn't even know if it'd go past the first month. So the first film that I showed was a film called Breaking Away. That's still possibly my favourite cycling film. It's also just a great feature film. So if you get a chance to watch that, that definitely for one, it for me is probably my favourite cycling film. But I'd throw a few others in there, that some of which I knew about before I started doing this, but some of which I came upon as I started to do research around it. There's classics like Bicycle Thieves from 1948, an Italian film, which is worth seeing. A couple I would say, though, I might get the pronunciation wrong. There's a film called Woodja, which I think is W-A-D-J-I-A. And that is a Saudi Arabian film filmed by a female director, bearing in mind there's no public cinema in Saudi Arabia and certainly no, you know, female directors sort of publicly in Saudi Arabia. And it's a film about a teenage girl, sort of coming-of-age film in an Islamic society, and her love for the bike. And it gives you a beautiful portrait inside a society that many of us don't see, or our portrayal of that society is often a very negative one. So that is a great film to see. The other one I'd recommend is The Kid with a Bike, which is a sort of French-Belgian feature film as well, about a young boy and his love for a bike, and who's been sort of left in an orphanage by his father, and about a local hairdresser who tries to sort of foster and adopt that child. It's a bit of gritty realism, but it's a good film. On the sort of pure cycling side of things, because they're sort of feature films that feature the bike, on the pure cycling side of things, I'd look at Sunday in Hell, classic documentary of the Paris-Roubaix race from the 1970s with Eddie Merckx. I'd look at Pantani, which is a film that looks at this Italian sort of legend and really looks at the dark heart of cycling and drugs and the mafia and all sorts of dodgy things that were going on. That's a great film as well. So I think those would be my ones I'd go for.
So that's what you could have seen at the Leeds Bicycle Film Club. A few of the films that Ian mentioned crop up in the British Film Institute's top 10 list of cycling films, and we'll come back to that particular list a bit later. But what about the future? What films would Ian like to show in the months, perhaps years to come?
The two that spring to mind is, there's a documentary that's been made on a guy called Sven Nys, who many people won't know him, but he is just recently retired, but was the global king of cyclocross racing and an absolute legend in Belgium. A documentary's been made of his last season. I'd like to try and show that. And the other one I want to show, which is a feature film called The Middle of the Earth, and it's based on a true story of a Brazilian family who lived miles from Rio, about 2,000 miles from Rio, and the father decides to take his... He believes if he can get to Rio, he'll get a job to support his family, so they cycle those 2,000 miles, and it's about their journey. So I'd like to show those films, if I can do, over the next sort of few months.
And the film that we're going to see tonight is called Bicycle, yeah?
It is imaginatively titled Bicycle, yes. And it's a documentary that looks at the sort of history of the bicycle from a British perspective, the modern bicycle invented in Coventry, and it looks at the history of the bicycle and its social impact, both sort of its sort of rise, then its sort of complete decline and collapse almost, and now the sort of rise again, both in terms of it as a sport in the Olympics, but also in terms of more people, more cycle lanes. You know, it's started to become a little bit more of a growth again, or is it? I think that's the question.
If you were to make your own bicycle film, what would it be? And there must be a little niche area of the cycling films market out there that hasn't yet been covered. What film would you like to see made?
Oh, that's a tricky question. I mean, what I've learned through doing this is that, A, this is a niche area, but no matter where you go down this niche of cycling and different tribes within cycling, pretty much someone's covered it somewhere. But I guess for me, the thing I enjoy most about riding, and I like mountain biking, I like the social side of it. I like riding with my mates, beer afterwards. So if someone could really capture that, and maybe like a short film on the whole social side of riding, I think that would be what I would do.
How about a film about the Leeds Bicycle Film Club? That could be a film in itself.
It could be. It might be quite short, though. But yeah, I'd be happy to try and do something around that. That'd be quite good fun.
And just before we finish, you have been involved in various other endeavours in Leeds, trying to promote cycling, but the more cerebral sides of cycling. You had an event called Peddling Ideas. Can you just briefly talk about that and whether that's going to happen again?
Yeah, Peddling Ideas was another one of those great ideas that you have down the pub. And I ran it last year, and it was a two-day event, and we brought together over 20 speakers from all around the country looking at different types of culture within cycling, be that people who make bikes or people who go on adventures with them or people who just explore in their own lunchtime. I didn't have any idea if it was going to work, but I think from everyone who came and from my own purpose, it was an absolute roaring success. Everyone really enjoyed it. I do aim to try and do that again. I was going to try and do it this year, but things just got a little away from me. So I'm now planning, I was looking at a venue today actually, so I'm planning for next year to do something similar. Whether I do the full 2 days or maybe do a day, or I'm not sure yet. But yeah, I'm definitely trying to keep on top of doing little things around. I don't know if it's promoting cycling. I think for me, it's just providing a good time and bringing people together around a certain topic and seeing people enjoy themselves really, and just creating a bit of a cultural thing, which is good.
And what's the best way that people can find out about the film club and any other future ideas that you might have?
Well, I guess you can follow me on Twitter. So I'm at IanStreet67. I've also got a Twitter account for Pedalling Ideas, which is at Pedalling Ideas. And I've also got a Twitter account for the Bicycle Film Club, which is at Leeds Bicycle FC. The Bicycle Film Club and Pedalling Ideas have also got websites, so you can Google them and they'll pop up. And, you know, follow me on Twitter. I put out bits and bobs every now and again, so that's probably your best way. I don't use Facebook, so you have to use Twitter or Google.
OK, well, thanks for chatting, and I would imagine we'll probably grab another chat after the film, because I'm intrigued to know what you think about it, although we might be slurring our words by then.
Thanks, Andrew. Happy to chat. We're still waiting for a couple, but we're just going to start. If they turn up, and they can make their way in, it's fine. Has anyone not been here before? Two people, great. I'll do my little, because I feel the pain of everyone who's been here regularly. You have to listen to me do the same introduction every time, but I'll keep it breezy. So just so you know, my name's Ian Street, and I run, that's about it, isn't it? So tonight's film is a documentary about a bicycle. That's what it's called. But it's subtitled The Great British Movement, and it looks at the evolution of the bicycle from a British perspective, going back to the sort of Starley bike invented in Coventry, the modern bike that we'll all recognise, all the way through to the modern day. And it looks at the sort of rise of cycling, its sort of complete collapse when basically no one rode, back to maybe an argument that it's coming, it's sort of having its moment again, it's maybe on the rise, who knows, we could debate that. That'd be great. Without further ado, new people have just arrived. If you've missed, I'm not going to tell you everything I've just said, but it's going to be great, and I'll catch you. And we will kick off and we'll start it. Is that all right? Cool.
What does it feel like riding a bike?
What does it feel like? Oh, God, that's a terrible, difficult question.
I probably no longer think about it. It's just breathing.
It feels a little bit like flying sometimes as well, when you're going.
Ian is old school, and all his film evenings include an intermission, time to fill up on a beer, or in my case, turn round and chat with the people sitting behind me.
What do you think so far?
Yeah, I like it.
I find it really interesting. They've woven the Daniel Kahn story into it quite nicely, I think.
Yeah. I still don't understand track racing at all, but...
Is it the first time you've been here?
No, second time.
What did you go and see before?
The Story Mountain Biking.
And what do you think of the kind of genre of cycling films in general?
You need to be careful, don't you? But, you know, these are well-made films, aren't they? So I've enjoyed these ones. I've been to Hebden to see some shorts about mountain biking. They were good as well. I don't think I've seen a bad one yet. I've seen some awful YouTube content, so it's worth coming to see some properly put together films.
People say the Dutch, they're a cycling nation, but Britain will never be.
The thing that people don't realise about the Dutch is the Dutch weren't a cycling nation. In the 70s, they were going exactly the same direction as us. They were building bigger roads because they had more cars, bigger roads. And they made a conscious decision to say, right, we're going to make cycling and walking our preferred modes of transport. And they changed. And they put the equivalent of £20 a head per population every single year.
We'll be going back to Leeds later in the podcast to listen to some post-film chat in the bar. Meanwhile, Jimmy Hyland is only in his early 20s, but in 2016 he set off to cycle across Mongolia. He filmed his adventure, and I first saw his film, Mohon, at the Sheffield Adventure Film Festival earlier this year, where it won second prize in the Spirit of Adventure category. A few weeks ago, I saw the film again at the Saddleworth Outdoor Festival, where I also had the chance to chat to Jimmy about the trip and his film.
So, my name is Jimmy Hyland. I'm a photographer and a filmmaker. And as Chris mentioned, last year I made a solo cycle trip to cycle across Mongolia. I went on my own, I was unsupported, and I made a film about the whole thing, which is what I'm going to be speaking about today. Tonight I want to give a bit of an insight into the trip. I'm going to speak about the ups and downs, the good bits, the bad bits, and I'm going to try and be as honest as I possibly can about everything that went on. Really.
After we'd watched the film, I chatted with Jimmy and asked him to give me some more details about the journey, the cycle, and of course the film.
Yeah, so Mohon is the documentary from a trip that I made to cycle across Mongolia. It was a three-month trip. I was solo, unsupported. I landed in the capital city, Ulaanbaatar, and basically headed west on a bike. And I filmed the whole way. I filmed the whole story, and Mohon is that story in film.
And the thing that struck me immediately was the fact that you'd never done any long-distance cycling before going to Mongolia. That was your first trip.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'd cycled a fair amount, but I'd never actually cycled and then camped in consecutive order before. But I didn't really see how that was any different from normal cycling. So it was definitely a very, very steep learning curve with the cycling and camping and taking all your kit and dealing with the weather and getting wet and all the rest of it, but absolutely fantastic experience.
And the other surprising thing is the fact that you took a very basic bike with you. You didn't take an expensive bike or a bespoke bike or anything like that?
Yeah, that's right. One of the things that I kind of wanted to put across before I went out there was that you don't need big budgets or sponsors or anything to have a big adventure. You just got to go for it. You just got to get out there. And the bike was part of that. You know, I didn't have a big budget, and I bought the bike 2 weeks before I left for 50 quid off a mate, and it worked. You know, I had a few problems with maintenance, bits and pieces, but on the whole, it worked. It did its job, and you know, I think that kind of proved the point.
And how heavy was the bike and the kit?
With all the kit, with all the trailer, I had a trailer on the back and panniers on the bike, and including water and camping stuff and filming stuff and all the rest of it. It was about 60 kilos in total.
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah, it was heavy.
And how did the story, or how did the journey pan out? Did it go as you imagined it to go, or was it different?
I think before I went out there, I didn't really know what to expect at all. As I say, I hadn't done any cycle touring before. I hadn't been to Mongolia before. I hadn't appreciated how difficult the weather was and how big the distances were and stuff. So it definitely didn't go how I'd planned. But I don't really know what I was kind of expecting. And it was definitely a million times better than whatever it was that I was expecting before I went out there. It was an amazing experience.
Did you expect it to be more of a cycling journey or a photographer journey or simply a journey full stop?
I think initially I was expecting it to be a cycling journey. I always wanted the film to tell the story of the trip, and it was always important to me that the film wouldn't get in the way of the trip. So it was never going to be a filming trip kind of as the sole purpose for being there. But I think initially I thought it was going to be a cycling trip, but it turned out to be a lot more about the culture, about Mongolia, about kind of the different people and the different things that I came across along the way.
Now, initially, you really struggled in the first few days. That comes across quite clearly. You were emotionally quite distraught, I would say, at times.
Yeah, the first week was really difficult. There was a lot of wind. I was kind of in a place that I didn't really know a lot about. And I kind of had a big realisation that I'd bitten off more than I could chew. And I also had a lot of problems with dust storms. The first night that I slept in the tent was collapsed and completely knocked down by a dust storm, which was pretty scary. And I thought that things were going to be very hard. But after a week or so, I kind of realised that actually I needed to stop worrying about the distances and the cycling, and I needed to focus on the people, focus on the things that happened and the people that I met along the way. And as soon as I, literally as soon as I realised that and kind of made that realisation, the trip completely transformed and it was absolutely amazing.
Did you ever consider quitting in those first few days?
Yeah, the first day after the dust storm, after having no sleep, having the tent knocked down by the wind and having to go and find shelter in a local's house, I really, really seriously considered turning back and waiting for the wind to die down a little bit. But thankfully I didn't. I decided that I would do a day at a time. I would do a day. If I got to the end of it, then I'd do another day and just keep doing that. And eventually that got me to the end of realising that I needed to focus on the cycle, and everything got better and it was amazing.
So in terms of distance and days and things like that, what were the statistics of the trip?
I was there for just less than 3 months and I covered just less than 2,000 miles. My plan was to go west and cycle from Ulaanbaatar west, but because of the weather and snow and various other things, that didn't actually happen. So I did a bit of a horseshoe around, and I went about 1,000 miles west and then kind of up towards the north, and then I came back down southeast.
And what was the most surprising thing about Mongolia?
As I said before, I kind of didn't really know what to expect before I went out there at all, so I was very open to everything, and you know, there were so many new experiences, but how open the people were and how accommodating and lovely the people were was very pleasantly surprising.
Do you know if any of the people in the film have had the opportunity to actually see themselves in the film?
Yeah, a couple of the people I sent the film out to through social media, and they were really pleased to see it. Unfortunately, a lot of people out there don't have access to TVs or internet or anything, so they unfortunately haven't seen it, but I would really love to at some point go back out and try and re-find those people, particularly from photos. Actually, when I was there, I was also taking photos, and there's one photo that I took of a young boy. It's quite a striking image, and it's been quite pivotal in the starting of my photography career, and him particularly, I would love to go back and meet him again and see him again and kind of show him those photos and just reconnect with him.
Do you have any plans to repeat that kind of journey again? A different journey, a different location?
There's lots and lots of things kind of on the horizon that might happen or might not. I've just bought a tandem. I'd really like to do a big tandem tour. I would like to do a road trip around Europe and, you know, various other things, climbs and bits and pieces. But I would really love to go back to Mongolia and literally retrace the steps and kind of go and try and reconnect with those people. But because it's a very nomadic culture, it's very difficult to pinpoint where people will be. But I'm definitely going to try.
And if people want to see that film, where can they see it?
Yeah, so the film is available online. If you go to my website, which is www.jhparchive.co.uk, there's links to the film, to Mohon Film and other films that I've made there, and there's photos as well from the trip and other trips as well.
And it is an award-winning film. You did win various awards for that?
Yeah, that's right. It won in the summer the Spirit of Adventure Award at the Sheffield Adventure Film Festival, and it's also playing at film festivals all around the world in the next year.
Yeah, brilliant. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Is there a definitive list of the great cycling films? Of course not. It would be impossible to write one. But that didn't stop the BFI, the British Film Institute, from coming up with their own list of 10 great films about cycling. They asked Harry Bunnell to do the research, and a few days ago I tracked him down to Sicily. I chatted with him over Skype about the films he had put on the list, but first I asked him to explain his own background in cycling and the reason for him being in Sicily in the first place.
Yeah, sure. So I'm obviously very passionate about cycling. I've been riding for around 7 or 8 years now, and I've been with my club, Kingston Wheelers, in southwest London for the last 5 years. It's one of London's biggest clubs with 500 members, and since joining, I've got into racing, time trialing, track riding. So yeah, there's a great scene in London, and it's a great club to ride with. I'm currently out in Sicily, as you mentioned, so I'm on a work sabbatical, doing a lot of riding, doing a bit of blogging, a few different projects. So yeah, it's been a great experience this summer.
We'll come back to your own cycling projects in Sicily in a few minutes, but first of all, can you tell us how you came up with this list of 10 great cycling films in the first place?
So I originally wrote this list back in 2012 when I was working for the BFI. I was working there for 4 years in the marketing team. At the time, and still now, they were doing a lot of top 10 film lists. And it was the 100th edition of the Tour de France back in 2012. So we decided it'd be a good time to visit the kind of list of cycling films out there. There were a few lists out there already, but there was nothing really definitive in terms of a top 10. So basically the rules of these lists were that the films had to be available to view in the UK, either kind of online or on DVD. And I went away and I'd seen quite a few cycling films, started to kind of shortlist. The time consuming part was actually catching up with some that I hadn't seen, getting the shortlist ready, watching them all, and then actually breaking that down to the top 10.
We're going to kick off with the first one, 1948, The Bicycle Thieves, which is suitably an Italian film. Can you perhaps just briefly talk about that and why that was your first on the list?
Yeah, so this one I'd seen previously, and it's one of my favourite films, not even just about cycling. So it's directed by Vittorio De Sica, and it's a classic of Italian neorealism cinema. So this was a period of cinema in Italy where it was kind of very gritty. You know, it was a tough time in Italy. And so you had a whole set of directors creating these films that showed the kind of the real side of Italy. It showed poverty, it showed hardship and struggles. And this film was set in post-war Rome, and it follows the main character, Antonio, and his young son. So on he uses his bike for work, and one day in Rome, the bicycle gets stolen, and it basically follows them for a day through Rome trying to retrieve the bicycle.
Yeah, it's a charming film. I remember when I watched it a couple of years ago, the most surprising thing I seem to remember is the ending.
Yeah, I mean, without giving away too much, I think that's kind of typical of neorealism cinema. It's not kind of fluffy Hollywood style endings, and it's kind of gritty that goes along with the rest of the film, how it plays out.
Yeah, very different to that is the second film, 1949, Jour de Fête, Jacques Tati's film.
Yeah, so this was actually Jacques Tati's debut feature, and yeah, it's a real good laugh, this one. It follows a French rural postman played by Tati himself, so he starred in most of his films. And during the film, he's had a bit too much wine to drink, and he actually watches a film himself about the modern methods of the US Postal Service at a village fair he attends. So he kind of takes inspiration from this film that he sees about the US Postal Service, and takes his own extreme measures to speed up his own postal delivery. And yeah, there's some great slapstick scenes in it with him at one point accidentally joining a bicycle race in France. So you see him ahead of the peloton before he ends up in a river, which is a good laugh.
Yeah, you don't need to speak French to enjoy Jacques Tati's films. There's very little dialogue in them. And like you say, they're good slapstick stuff. Right, we've been to Italy, we've been to France. The next one, 1955, is definitely British. Cyclist Special.
Yeah, so if you look at the picture on the top 10, it's got a great shot of two cyclists without helmets with great sunglasses on. So this is all about Audax or touring cyclists. So the Audax scene is really thriving in the UK at the moment. My club actually hosts, I think, 5 Audax events for next year. It's basically long-distance cycling, and this one in particular was part of a British Transport Films collection that the BFI released. And it's all about how basically the British Transport promoting how you can use the train to get to the start of your ride. There's a great quote in it from H.H. England, the editor of Cycling Magazine. And he said, "A cycling tour without a map is like new potatoes without the smell of mint." So not many of us carry maps anymore in a jersey pocket. But yeah, it's a great reflection of the kind of era this film embodies.
Yeah, it's a great little period piece, and it's a pity that I can't imagine many British railway companies making films like that nowadays. But anyway, that's a different argument. Right, the next one, actually, I haven't seen. It's called Vive la Tour, 1962, but I do recognise the name of the director, Louis Malle.
Yeah, Louis Malle. So he went on to create many kind of feature films as well, but this is actually a short film. It's only 18 minutes long, but it's a real legendary cycling film, and it's a must-see. It's basically a short documentary about the Tour de France, and it's got a lot of quick-cutting scenes. It shows the culture and the attitudes of the peloton back in the 60s. So at one point, you see the riders stopping into a bar, giving credit notes and grabbing bottles of wine, champagne and beer for the rest of the team. So rather than carrying water up to their team leaders, they were often taking wine to them instead.
The next film is another very famous director, Ridley Scott, Boy and the Bicycle, 1965.
Yeah, this was really interesting. I first came across this through the BFI archives. So the BFI own a lot of Ridley Scott's first features. I believe he was at film school and creating a lot of short documentaries. So it features his younger brother, the late Tony Scott, who was a schoolboy playing truant for the day. He basically meanders around Hartlepool on his bicycle. It almost takes inspiration from James Joyce, Ulysses. So there's a kind of narrative over the top, and it's a stream of consciousness that basically reveal the everyday thoughts and frustrations of a teenage schoolboy. It's a really interesting one because it's so different to more recent sci-fi films such as Prometheus.
Is there a connection to be made between Boy and the Bicycle and the Bicycle Thieves in terms of the atmosphere of the film?
Yeah, almost certainly. I would say Ridley Scott would have seen, would have studied all the Italian neorealism films, so he would have almost certainly have seen the Bicycle Thieves and taken inspiration from it.
I think I'd rather meander around Rome than meander around Hartlepool. Right, back to cycle racing for the next one, Sunday in Hell from 1976.
Yeah, this is a great one. This is a real classic. I think if you're passionate about cycling and you had to pick one film from this list to see, this would probably be it. So it's directed by Jürgen Leth, who is a Danish director, and he was a mentor to Lars von Trier. So yeah, he's kind of got real experience in the industry, and he now commentates on the Tour de France each year for Danish television. And this covers the 1976 Paris-Roubaix one-day classic race, nicknamed the Hell of the North, hence the name A Sunday in Hell. And it basically looks at the stars of the day, people like Eddie Merckx, Moser and Roger de Vlaminck. There's actually a whole compilation of his sports films, which A Sunday in Hell features alongside. And there's another one about the hour record as well. So yeah, it's a great compilation.
Yeah, it's a kind of film also when you watch it. It shows the brutal reality of cycling, and especially obviously cycling the Paris-Roubaix, which is, you know, notoriously difficult across the cobbles of Belgium. Perhaps nowadays we have a very sanitised image of pro cycling, Team Sky, etc. But it's certainly not the image you get from watching that film.
Yeah, this shows the real kind of emotion and hardship of that race. I've cycled in Flanders, but I've not done Paris-Roubaix, and it looks pretty awful.
Yeah. Right, the next one is Breaking Away. Now, this one, actually, I'm a regular at the Leeds Bicycle Film Club, which we're also talking about in this podcast. And Breaking Away, 1979, was the very first film that was shown at the Leeds Bicycle Film Club. Again, very different from the other films that we've mentioned.
Yeah, so this is a real kind of Hollywood classic in terms of cycling films. It was actually directed by Peter Yates, who's from the UK, originally from Aldershot, I believe. And it's about a group of friends in Bloomington, Indiana. And they're kind of the local boys, and they're disparagingly referred to as the Cutters by all the kind of preppy university students, due to the kind of families working in the stone cutting industry traditionally. And there's a great character in it played by Dennis Christopher, and he's a real Italophile, so much so that he pretends to all the local girls that he's Italian. He names the renames the family dog Fellini as well, much to his father's annoyance.
Next film is Belleville Rendezvous, a bit more recent than the other films, 2003, but a beautiful animated film all about the Tour de France.
Yeah, this is a great one. It's a real wacky animation. It's by a French director, Sylvain Chomet, who's now based in Edinburgh in Scotland, and he's a regular at the Edinburgh International Film Festival. It's about a young boy called Champion who lives alone with his grandmother and begins to realize his potential when he receives a bicycle. And then several years later, kind of the film cuts ahead and he's become quite a handy bike racer and enters into the Tour de France. And it all becomes quite surreal. It's very much in the style of Studio Ghibli, if you've seen any of those. Chimay also directed The Illusionist in 2010, which is a nice captip to Jacques Tati, basically playing the story of his life.
And again, this is a French film. I think it's French-Canadian, actually. It's a French film that you can watch, anybody could watch, because simply there's no or very little dialogue in it. There's also some very nice music in Belleville Rendezvous, so even that's worth digging out if you get the chance. Right, back to Britain, more specifically back to Scotland and The Flying Scotsman, 2006.
Yeah, so this is a great biopic about the Scottish cyclist Graham O'Bree, who twice held the world hour record, and he was world champion in the 4,000 metre pursuit in 1993 and 1995. He's very little known outside the cycling scene, and he's a very interesting character as well. So he's battled with inner demons over his life with mental illness and depression. Yeah, he's a real legend of the cycling scene, and he's still doing some kind of crazy stuff today in terms of trying to break records. One interesting fact is that he built his bike, which he named Old Faithful, from washing machine parts to break the hour record. His title was later taken away from him by the UCI, who are depicted as the World Cycling Federation in the film, due to his bike not being legal. A real legend.
And then the final film on your list is The Kid with the Bike, 2011, which was a Belgian film by the Dardenne brothers.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a drama that I saw, I think, originally at the London Film Festival. And it's about a young boy called Cyril who's basically been abandoned by his father. And he escapes school to search for his bike. And it becomes quite symbolic of his relationship with his dad. So one of the heavier ones in terms of this list, but it's a real interesting one. The film was a co-winner of the Grand Prix at the 2011 Cannes Film Festival, and there's some nice nods to Italian neorealism as well within the film, particularly The Bicycle Thieves.
Which brings us kind of full circle. So those are the 10 films that you wrote about back in 2012. Have there been, to your knowledge, any other great cycling films that have been produced in the last few years?
Yeah, there's been a few, and I've seen, since this list came out, I've seen The Armstrong Lie, which is an interesting one. It's a documentary about Lance Armstrong, and it was, the creation of it started before all the revelations came out about Armstrong. And so it went from a kind of filming collaboration with him to almost like an expose of basically the doping scandal. So that's an interesting one. I must admit, I haven't seen The Programme, which is the more recent drama depicting Armstrong. That's currently on my list to see. Aside from that, the one that I'd probably add to this list is the one about Marco Pantani, Accidental Death of a Cyclist. I believe that came out in 2014, and it's a really powerful documentary about the life of Pantani, his battle with drugs and addiction. There's some really poignant interviews with his family as well, where they believe he was actually murdered as well. So there's been an ongoing case in Italy trying to work out kind of what actually happened. But it's all very, very kind of smoke and mirrors, as a lot of things are in Italy.
Yeah, I suppose it's an interesting reflection upon the last few years in cycling, that so many films have been depicting the drug scene and the problems in cycling, especially in pro cycling, and that's been the fodder of the films that they've made.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it seems that the peloton is a lot cleaner these days, and obviously the 90s was a really kind of rife time for doping in the peloton. So obviously, as all of this has come out, I think that all unraveled with Armstrong a few years ago, and it's obviously a lot of it has come to light. So yeah, that's obviously been a big talking point for the last few years.
Well, there is one film which has come out in recent years which I did see at the Leeds Bicycle Film Club, and it's called Clean Spirit, about a cycling team, the Argos cycling team, who go out of their way to make sure that they're not using any EPOs or drugs or what have you, and it's a really good uplifting tale.
Yeah, this is another one on my list to see. And yeah, that team has a lot of young riders, particularly people like John Degenkolb and Marcel Kittel, are very outspoken against doping. So yeah, it seems like there's a good crop of the new generation who are very kind of anti-doping, which hopefully gives a bit of confidence for the future of the sport.
Yeah, that's a kind of a good positive place to end our discussion about the cycling film. So thanks for that. Now, just before we finish, could you just explain, you've been doing two cycling projects down in southern Italy, down in Sicily. One you've done, actually, and one you're about to do. Could you just tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, so fairly recently, about a month ago, I Everested Mount Etna. So Everesting is a cycling challenge where riders complete the same elevation as Mount Everest on a single climb. So I was the first to do this in Sicily. I think about 2,000 people have done it in total. There's a hall of fame on everesting.cc where you can find more information. And I picked Salto di Cane on Mount Etna, which is the climb the Giro d'Italia used this year. And I cycled up it 8 times in one day and reached 10,500 meters, which was interesting and tough. But good.
Yeah, well, congratulations on that. Does that mean that anybody can choose their local hill and cycle up it goodness knows how many times to the point where they get to, what is it, 8,840-something?
Meters, yeah. Well remembered.
So you can choose your local hill and just do it?
Yeah, that's right. People have done it on Box Hill, Swains Lane in North London. I know people have done it in Wales on, I think it's Black Mountain. And you get people doing it in Italy on the Madonna del Gazzalo. So all sorts of hills. I picked a mountain because I figured I'd rather do it fewer times rather than doing the same hill over 100 times. But, you know, each to their own.
Yeah, I'm tempted to try it myself on my own little hill here in West Yorkshire anyway. I think it might take quite a while to accumulate 8,800 metres. And the other thing is something that you're going to be doing before you return to Britain.
Yeah, that's right. So next week I'm planning to cycle the circumference of Sicily non-stop, hoping to do it within 48 hours, but we'll see. It's 1,000 kilometres round and about 8,000 metres climbing. So I've got a friend coming out next week to join me to do that. And we've got the bike packing bags, we'll have tri bars on the bike, and we'll try and go non-stop and just sleep for an hour or two here and then when we get tired.
And is there any way that people can find out how you get on when you do this, you attempt to cycle around the coast of Sicily?
Yeah, sure. We hope to have some kind of live tracking so people can follow us as we go. We'll put it on social media as well. I haven't put anything up yet, but we'll be using the hashtag Sicily1000 on Twitter and Instagram, so you can follow there. And I have a blog as well, hasventurous.com.
Has Venturus, that's Has, H-A-Z, Venturus, V-E-N-T-U-R-A-S.com. And you're also at Harry Burnell, that's two N's and two L's, on Twitter.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, well, thanks for chatting, Harry. I think your knowledge of cycling films is amazing. And good luck with your future cycling endeavours.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Andrew. Nice talking.
I'm now talking to Barry Godin. Now, I bumped into Barry at the Cycle Touring Festival in Clitheroe earlier this year, and Barry has a really interesting take when it comes to cycling and travelling. So, first of all, Barry, welcome to the Cycling Europe podcast.
Thank you very much.
First of all, can you just explain what makes your take on cycling and travelling just a little bit different from most people?
Well, I come from a very different background. I come from a mountain bike background. So my style of touring, you could say, is simply off-road touring. We now call it bike packing. I also like to really film my journeys to show other people how accessible and how fun it is to wild camp and be in the ultimate wilderness.
So when I saw you at the Cycle Touring Festival, you were actually giving a talk about how to how people could go out and make their own films. But what inspired you and to begin with to actually make your own films?
So for me, it was the introduction of digital cameras. It meant you could experiment far more without worrying about film and the cost of development and things like that. So you get really excited and experimental. So I literally filmed every mountain bike ride we went on. I think I've been filming for like 15 years. Maybe the first films weren't so good as the recent ones, but it's always been a passion. And also the fact that I could show other people what adventures I was going on. And the idea of filming the adventures was to show, give people an insight into what kind of extreme environments and conditions we found ourselves into.
Yeah, because your films are actually really high quality films. I think most of them, certainly the ones that I've seen, would certainly not look out of place if you saw them on an adventure program on the TV, for example. Do you have any formal training when it comes to filmmaking?
Not at all. I'm purely self-taught. But I found from watching films with a very critical eye, you can learn a lot of different techniques. And it's also the way of kind of experimenting yourself and trying to find different ways to introduce story and narrative into it. And my style has developed over time, and that's why I've been doing it for so many years, and that's why we got to where we are now.
So what would you say the biggest challenges when it comes to, you know, heading out on your bike and with your camera, your GoPro or your phone or whatever you're going to use, what are the biggest challenges to actually making a decent film?
I think the first challenge, and I'll touch on it later on, is because also it's filming yourself. I'm a solo traveller most of the time. And so in doing that, you need to actually spend quite a lot of time setting up tripods, talking to yourself. There's a lot of pressure. And also you are trying to do the adventure on your own as well. So it's quite a lot of pressure to kind of do both at the same time. And the other element would also be powering all your equipment. Often I go away for 2 or 3 weeks into the wilds. So you need to find ways of powering and also memory and lots of things like that. So there's a hell of a lot to think about when you're solo filming.
I sympathise completely because I, you know, when I go cycling, I take my phone, my iPad, my GoPro, my SLR, etc. And it can be a bit of a nightmare actually charging them. And I can usually survive for about 2 days, I think, without being plugged into a plug. But have you got any tips for anybody who wants to survive a bit longer than 2 days off-grid?
Yeah, I can get almost 2 weeks off-grid. So I carry multiple batteries, which is probably the easiest way to do it rather than having to recharge things. And also it's quicker. So for a GoPro, for instance, I take 18 GoPro batteries. That give me 18 days worth of GoPro, which is quite good. My phone, I just charge off a battery brick, but I also do have a Dynamo USB hub on my bike, which means I can actually charge things whilst I'm riding along, which is quite cool.
Yeah, right. So some good tips there. I might put those into practice. Okay, what's the most important, the cycling or the filmmaking?
I need inspiration and excitement of making that shot. So when I kind of riding through really mountainous landscapes, I picture that shot before I actually take it, which means I want to take it, which means it's worth spending the time. It's when your landscape isn't quite so spectacular, or it's when it becomes harder to film. And that's when you start to get a little bit of holes in your storytelling, because there's several days you don't film, and obviously when you're feeling low, on my last trip I had food poisoning, which definitely made it quite hard to want to film for a couple of days.
So looking back on your films, which film are you most proud of? Which one for you best represents what you're capable of doing?
I think I'm most proud of my current films, the ones I'm actually working on at the moment, because I've learned all the techniques and I've obviously ironed out lots of problems along the way, and so they're getting more and more polished. I think it's a raw storytelling film. I think my Iceland film, which is when we spent 3 weeks in the interior, and lucky there was two people on that trip. So there's a bit more interest in terms of the connection between two people and trying to get lots of footage between different angles. And so it did equal a lot more exciting opportunities in that way.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point. Do you think when you go cycling with somebody else, do they almost become a character within the film, that it's easier to make the film as a result of there being an extra person there?
I think there isn't. For me, I find it very hard when I haven't filmed everything, because I have to, as when I film, I know exactly what I have filmed, so I know what I need to edit. When other people are filming, you then have to sit through their footage and then try and work out a story from their footage that matches your story. So yes and no, it's definitely nice having a different character in there rather than just myself, but it does equal other problems later on in other ways.
Have you ever considered using a drone to do any filming?
Oh, yes, I have. I'm just waiting for batteries to get a little bit better, a little bit lighter. And they have got small enough nowadays. So I'm just waiting for that time where I can buy like 100 batteries and go into the wild with a drone.
There is a new GoPro drone, isn't there?
There is indeed. GoPro is a really nice, easy to use drone. I haven't used it personally. The other one that's quite exciting is one called DJI Spark. And it's actually is the size of your iPhone. It only shoots HD, unlike the 4K of the other ones, but the fact it's so small and neat really means it's accessible and easy to use.
What are the top tips? What are the three top tips you would give to someone who wanted to start making their own films?
I think my first key top tip is learn to edit. As soon as you learn to edit, you learn a hell of a lot how to film. It's not until you get into the editing stage you realise that how to build a story, what footage you need, what bits you may have not filmed, and also the quality of the shots you're doing. So those smooth pans, it's not till you get back home do you realise, oh, that was really shaky, which means you might have to cut that one out. So that's quite an interesting. Based on that as well, film lots on your adventure. The more you film and the more footage you have, the less you have to worry about the story when you're actually on the journey. It's nice to set up with an idea of what you want the film to be, but that does restrict you in your journey terms of it evolving and seeing what happens. So I like to film a hell of a lot, which means when I get home, I can mould it into a bit more of a story. And the other major point is telling the story. I watch a lot of films which don't have any talking or any kind of, you have no context of where they are. So even if it's a voice, if you're scared of talking to the camera, record some voiceovers. I like a voiceover recorded in the field or as in at the time, because it sounds a bit more immediate and a bit more emotionally connected to what you're doing. So that's a really nice way. And also use maps. Maps is a great way of showing the story going through, and also the change of days, because I also use normally a time lapse of putting my tent up in the night to kind of mark the end of that day and it going into the next day.
So what's up next? Where's your next planned adventure to?
Well, my next adventure, I've just, the past 3 months, I've spent 5 weeks in Scotland. So I've spent quite a lot of time up there. I've got a bit of a break from bikepacking in terms of, I've got a couple of micro trips coming up, just some weekends, but I don't quite know where to go yet. Lots and lots of plans. But I have got a week's mountain biking on proper full suspension bikes up in Scotland again in a week's time. So I can't complain.
So finally, where can people see your videos?
Well, all my videos at the moment are on Vimeo. I used it because it was the better quality website out of the two, but obviously YouTube's success recently is definitely one to be picking up upon. So I will be on YouTube soon. Watch that space. I also write for Bikepacker magazine, so all my videos are up there, and also they're complemented with articles as well.
So if somebody types into Google Barry Godin, Vimeo or YouTube or Bikepacker, and they'll quite easily find you.
Indeed. Just hunt them down and have a watch and let me know what you think.
Many thanks to Ian Street of the Leeds Bicycle Film Club, to Barry Godin, to Jimmy Highland and to Harry Bunnell for their contributions to this film-themed Cycling Europe podcast. I'll be back in December, of course, with episode 4. And if you'd like to contribute, then please do get in touch. All the contact details are on the website cyclingeurope.org. Now, here's an interesting fact to finish with. The Lumiere brothers and Thomas Edison are usually credited with pioneering the moving image. However, there are a few people who consider that the very first film was actually shot in Leeds in 1888 by a chap called Louis Le Prince. So where better a place to finish the film-themed Cycling Europe podcast than back in Leeds at the Leeds Bicycle Film Club? If you remember, we just finished watching the film Bicycle, and here I am with Ian Street in the bar of the Reliance pub in Leeds, along with a couple of other people and a few beers, discussing film and cycling in general. I'll see you in December.
There you go. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed it. Yeah. Next film, hopefully, November the 20th. Don't know what it is yet, but I ain't got the license. But when I get a license, I'll show something. There you go. I'll be in a bar if anyone wants a beer, but otherwise, thanks very much for your support. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
How many of you this is on? Can you remember? Can you remember them all?
Yeah, probably.
We were trying to remember this. There's a couple I've seen, I can't remember where they were, but I'll know as soon as.
I've done about 20, I think, in total.
I can remember Pantani when I saw that, and Bellevue.
Bellevue.
Yeah.
Well, we started with Breaking Away, that was the first film I put on. Because that was the one I thought, that's the if I could put one film on, that's the film I want to see, and that's my favourite spirit, I think.
Bellevue Rendezvous. Did you ever look up? I've not seen it, so I've no idea what it's like. Brain Power.
What is that?
I've no idea what it's like, but it's about one stage in the tour in about 2002.
Alright.
I only know about it, I think, because I actually saw this. I've only seen two real actual stages in the tour. And I was actually at this one that this film's about, and it was Tyler Hamilton before he was disgraced.
Okay.
Where he won by a huge margin.
Right. Brain Power. Right.
And I loved John Grimshaw. Lottery bid from Sustrans. Let's bid for 42 million.
Yeah.
Because that's the answer to Life, the Universe, and everything from The Hitchhiker's Guide. I thought that was fantastic. You know, and I think the third one from Chris Boardman saying that, you know, the amount of money it costs to do up a tube station in London equates to the amount of money they're asking for the entire country's cycling budget for a year. You know, and that places a lot of things into consideration. I thought those three things out of that film are really...
Interesting.
And will you be coming back in the future?
Oh, definitely. Yes. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Probably not for E.T.
What? I don't think I've actually seen E.T. all the way through, so I'll definitely be coming back for that one. I wish I'd not missed BMX Bandits.
That was a classic film.
Final question to Ian.
Yeah.
This is the second birthday.
Pretty well. Last month would have been the actual second birthday, but I couldn't get the license for the film I wanted to show. So, effectively, this is two years since we've been going.
Okay.
Considering I thought we'd struggle to sell one out, and the Reliance where we host them kindly said I could have four. They gave me 4 months. We would do it as a bit of a trial, see what would happen. And amazingly, and I think the third film we did was that Would Ya. And I thought, if you can sell out a Monday night in Leeds showing a film about a 14-year-old girl in Saudi Arabia in Arabic, I thought, we're onto something here. That's pretty niche, isn't it? So I thought, if we can do that, people will, you know, if you build it, they will come. It's a classic thing, isn't it? So, yeah, it's all good. Keep going. I'll keep putting them on and people keep turning up, I guess. That's the thing.